inhumane. It is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of Planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker, Steve Nolan is our engineer, and we have several guests tonight. Our primary is Al Giordano, the publisher of Narconews.com. But first, I want to bring in Kevin Zeese, the president of Common Sense for Drug Policy, CSDP.org.
Okay, we're blessed to have with us one of the nation's foremost authorities on drug policy, Kevin Zeese, the president of Common Sense for Drug Policy. Hello, Mr. Zeese.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm well, sir. I understand besides working towards, against the disenfranchisement that sometimes comes with a drug conviction, you're also working about the disenfranchisement that may come through these new voting machines. Tell us about your work of the late here, sir.
Well, I'll be happy to. Of course, I'm still serving as president of Common Sense, which is working nationally for sensible drug policies. People can read about that on our website, which is the initials of the organization, csdp.org. But also in Maryland, we have two campaigns going. One is on the issue of treatment instead of incarceration. Maryland has the most racially unfair criminal justice system in the country. 90% those incarcerated for drug offenses are black, even though only about 25% of the population is African American. What's interesting about Maryland this year is that we have a Republican governor, Robert Ehrlich, and he's the first Republican since Spiro Agnew back in the 1960s. But because of the amazing budget deficit that we're facing, like so many other states, Maryland is moving toward making alternatives to incarceration for drug offenders. And I think we have a real good chance this year of bringing together a coalition of budget-conscious Republicans and legislators, racially-conscious social justice legislators, and putting in place some really sensible drug laws. So we got a twofer in this one, fighting for sensible drug treatment and sensible criminal justice and sensible budgets. So that's a really interesting thing to watch. And if it succeeds, I think it'll be a good model for a lot of other states to follow. So we have a website called treatnotjail.org for that one. The other project that you mentioned in the opening is this issue of paperless electronic voting machines. The essential issue there is across the country now we're seeing these computerized voting machines being put into place. And I'm not against computerized voting, but the problem is that there's no paper trail, so there's no way to independently audit the result. And that's a serious problem because, as you know, elections are fought aggressively, and there has been notable corruption in our election system. And with these computerized voting machines, the corruption becomes potentially catastrophic. You can have code, malicious code, put into these machines that no one can discover. There are just so many hundreds of thousands of bits of code in these machines that it's impossible anyone manually or by computer to discover these malicious codes. And you can change the turnout of an election with that kind of result. So we're very concerned about that. And, the leading company that produces these machines, Diebold, is a very partisan company. The CEO is an aggressive Bush supporter, and he's, raised a couple hundred thousand dollars for President Bush's reelection, and he has promised to deliver Ohio to Bush, which may be the Florida of 2004. And now he is in the position of counting our votes. And these votes are counted in secret. I mean, we don't see the count happening. You push a button, the machine counts it behind the machine's closed doors. And so whatever that software says, we don't know. And it's a trade-secreted software, so it's secret software. And they count the vote in ways that we just don't know what it really means. So
no recount is possible.
No real recount is possible, that's right. And there's no way to do an independent audit. So what we're advocating for is a paper trail. Voters, before the final vote is cast, they see a printout of their ballot. They say, yes, that's who I voted for, and the paper trail goes into a lockbox. So you can compare the lockbox paper with the electronic vote. You do an audit on election day of about 2% randomly of the votes to see if there's inconsistencies. That way you catch any inconsistencies. right away. And if there's a close election, you can do a recount with a paper trail. So we're not against computerized voting, but we want to see it not be paperless. It needs to have a voter-verified paper audit ballot to go with it. I wanted to give one more bit of information, which I came across my desk today.
Go ahead, sir.
Now, I'm very concerned about the Democrats and Republicans in this election. It looks like the people we ended up picking are pretty much all drug warriors. And so I'm worried that that issue, like many others, will not be on the table. John Kerry supported the war. John Kerry supported the Patriot Act. He supported the No Child Left Behind. He didn't support Kyoto. So a lot of issues are not going to be on the table. And I just got a note today from Ralph Nader, who's currently exploring whether to run or not, and he wanted to get advice on what kind of drug policy made sense. And I hope that that is a sign that we may get a chance to get our issues on the presidential debate this year, because otherwise we may have to be closed out, and it'll be the corporate Democrats versus the corporate Republicans and the people we left out of the equation. So keep your eyes open for that. Nader may be a savior for us. And what I liked about Nader's strategy when I talked with him, he was talking about how he's trying to open a second front against Bush, and his goal is to help beat Bush this year. So that may be something for people to watch. I'm glad to talk to you about that as it develops as well. But those of you in drug policy, I'd urge you to go to Nader Explore 04 and urge him to run and urge him to support sensible drug policies.
Kevin Zeese, President of Common Sense for Drug Policy, thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot for having me on, Dean.
All right, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, next up, I want to bring in another guest, a guy whose work I've tried to emulate, the publisher of Narco News, Mr. Al Giordano.
Momento.
Thank you.
Si bueno.
Bueno, mi amigo. Al, this is Dean.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, wonderful. All right, sir, for my listeners who aren't aware of your work, tell them who you are and what you're up to these days.
This is Al Giordano, publisher of the Narco News Bulletin, which appears on the Internet at www.narconews.com. And we're getting ready to relaunch Narco News, which has been down since last October, but we've gotten a lot of public support that didn't want to see Narco News reporting on the drug war and democracy from Latin America disappear. And so very shortly, in the matter of the next 2 weeks, we're going to be starting back up again.
Wonderful. Yeah, and tell us about some of the journalists and the people that you're training to be journalists. What's that all about?
Well, Narco News also runs the School of Authentic Journalism. The first session was in February of 2003 on the Yucatan Peninsula, when we had 26... authentic journalism scholars from all over the hemisphere, from Brazil and Bolivia and Argentina, Colombia, Venezuela, Mexico, the United States, Europe, and we covered the Drug Legalization Summit in Mérida, Yucatán, produced about 50 in-depth reports in English, Spanish, and Portuguese about that event, and we had another session last summer in different parts of Mexico, and we're right now planning a probably the biggest one we've ever had for the summer to come, and we'll be announcing some details soon over at narconews.com.
Now, Al, I'm always amazed at the magnitude and the quality of the work you guys are able to put out, and the work you've done in the past is still available online, am I right?
Oh, yeah, Narco News has archived all approximately 900 stories that we've done since the year 2000. We've broken a lot of hard news. We've pushed the commercial press into covering the drug war and democracy stories where they haven't covered them before, and where they've covered them badly or untruthfully, we've pushed them into covering them more truthfully. A case in point was in April of 2002, when the New York Times and CNN and AP and Reuters all reported that the president of Venezuela had resigned, and we came out there with our information and sources and said, no, he didn't resign. He was kidnapped at gunpoint in a United States government-backed coup d'etat, and of course, within 3 days, that came true, and the rest of the media began to admit it. We've also reported on the on the unethical activities by a lot of United States and European journalists in Latin America. They go to these small countries, they become one of the only voices, and some of the smaller ones, the only voice in English reporting what's happening there. For example, in Bolivia, the AP bureau chief turned out to be lobbying for a multi-million dollar water project as he was covering the Congress and the president. And, he, of course, after we filed our report, he had been bureau chief for 18 years, but he had to resign within 18 days later. And this is the kind of thing that I think is very, very important, to do this kind of vigilance on the commercial media, to send a message to all of them that, hey, they better watch their step, that business as usual can't continue with the Latin American coverage. That's especially important with drug war coverage, because, as you know, Dean, the commercial media does not generally cover the issue of drugs and drug policy well at all.
Well, this is true. I mean, the fact that England just made it where they'll no longer arrest people barely made a blip in the U.S. press, and the fact that Canada now grows their own is certainly not publicized. And what's happening in Central and South America? Are there changes going on down there that the listeners should be aware of in regards to drug reform?
Yes, as a matter of fact, right now the Brazilian Congress is discussing a law that would decriminalize the drug user, that would say that the person who's caught possessing user quantities of drugs will no longer have to go to prison or even face any kind of fine. You have similar things going on from the executive branch in Argentina and in Venezuela, which is the most sweeping thing pending, because this is coming in as part of an entire reform of the legal system, which says that if you possess 5 to 10 days worth of an average user's dose of any illegal drug, and that's all drugs, not just marijuana, but cocaine and coca-based drugs, but opiate-based drugs like heroin, but designer drugs, anything like that, you no longer have to go to jail. And what's most exciting about Venezuela is that the party leading this effort has an absolute majority in Congress, and its track record over the last 5 years of getting its reforms through Congress is almost 100%.
Well, that's amazing, and again, we, of course, don't even hear the least about that up here in the mainstream media of America. Al, what's next for Narco News?
Well, I think what we're going to be doing over the next month is going to be very interesting. We're going to be trying something new with the project that no newspaper, to our knowledge, in English, in Spanish, or in Portuguese, which are the three languages we report in, has ever done. We're going to open up the publication a lot more to the readers. In other words, what we call classic narco news will still be there, the hard news, reported stories by our journalists from every corner of America. But we're also going to add in a kind of virtual community of all our journalists, of everyone who's ever helped us, either with their time, their labor, their money, who will now be able to comment freely on each story that we write. And about 30 of our journalists are going to be having blogs or web blogs on the site, where they'll be covering these events and these fast-turning events more rapidly and more quickly, so that every time a new story appears out of Brazil or out of Mexico or someplace, we'll be able to put up a quick translation of the three or four key paragraphs of that story, and then add more information and comments collectively as a larger group of what we call the Narco News Swarm, that has been so successful in crisis situations like last October's crisis in Bolivia that led to the resignation of a corrupt president. And so this is, if you're familiar with some of the sites like the Daily Kos that have covered the Democratic presidential primaries, or some of the innovations that have been used by some of the presidential candidates this year on the internet to build community, and also, frankly, we have the Fund for Authentic Journalism's backing now, and they feel this is going to serve to create a grassroots funding base for Narco News so that the newspaper will never again be dependent on large donors and instead will build a very large base of small ones.
Somewhat like MoveOn.org, I would suppose.
Something like that, yes. A combination. You know, we've been studying for the past 3 months the innovations by MoveOn, by Meetup, by the Dean and the Clark and the Kerry and the Kucinich campaigns, by things that have happened in languages that we've had to, like, go to great lengths to translate, like in South Korea and some other places like that. And what we're about to hatch is so qualitatively and substantially different than any project in journalism that's ever been launched before, and certainly anything covering the drug war, democracy, and or Latin America. So we're really excited about it. Our webmaster, Dan Fetter, is working around the clock. Luis Gomez, who has been our Andean bureau chief, is going to be taking on a new role that we'll be announcing soon. We're bringing on some more full-time staff, mainly from some of the names that have been reporting from us all along, who our readers already know and love, but these folks are coming on full-time from different places, especially in South America, where we're beefing up our coverage a lot.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
It's expected that people are going to get into difficult emotions and difficult experiences. The dark night of the soul. People will have these kind of struggles, emotional struggles.
Our answer from Dr. Rick Doblin.
Psychedelics.
Basically, the idea is to change political consciousness in this country so that our children, hopefully our children and certainly our grandchildren, look back on the drug wars of the last few decades and of today with the same sort of distaste and contempt and even horror that we look back today on the Jim Crow laws and the slavery in our own nation's history.
Ethan Nadelman, Executive Director, Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org. Okay, we're back, and we're visiting with Mr. Al Giordano, the publisher of NarcoNews.com.
Now, Al, I want to thank you for joining us several weeks back here on the New York Times Drug Policy Forum, and I finally got after them enough that they've updated the links to the transcript. It's now available on their site at nytimes.com.
Oh, terrific. Well, we'll adjust our links accordingly.
Yes. I hear you. Alan, what's happening in Colombia? I understand that the cocaleros are winning some battles in their rights for personal use of the coca plant. How's that proceeding?
Well, I know that's happening in Bolivia. I haven't seen any evidence that's happening in Colombia.
My mistake, sir.
In Bolivia, of course, it's a very interesting situation because the coca growers and the movements they've allied with, which are miners and other and factory workers, which are elderly people and retirees, which are teachers, which are students, which are the rest of the indigenous movements, they've now become electorally the biggest and most important bloc in the Bolivian Congress. And of course, by uniting with these other movements, by ceasing to be just a single issue pro-coca leaf movement, and by looking at some of the root causes behind the drug war and finding reason to struggle together with other groups that are having the same problems because of the same economic political system, they have achieved not only these huge electoral victories, but they were able to paralyze the country last October with blockades all over the country. And after 2 weeks of this paralyzation, the corrupt president was forced to flee to Miami. He resigned. He lost all international support, especially from neighboring South American countries like Brazil and Argentina. And his vice president took over, and this guy has had to play it a lot more carefully because he knows of the strength that the coca growers, in their alliance with other social movements, has built. Now, the battle ain't over yet. We have a series of reports that we're going to be coming out with starting next week or the week after that from Bolivia, with five or six different authentic journalists weighing in. And and you'll see just how complex the situation is and how negative the influence of the United States Embassy is down here. But even the embassy has lost a lot of control, and what it's lost control to is democracy. And it, that's kind of ironic, because Washington always talks about how it wants to bring democracy to the world. Well, here's a situation where a part of the world named Bolivia is confronting Washington with authentic democracy. So it's a very interesting ongoing story, and we're on the ground covering it.
And I got to commend you guys on the courage and the just the initiative and follow through to get it done. Kind of scares me up here in Texas. It's bad enough in this state alone, I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, things are pretty dicey in the United States. I mean, you've got a presidential election coming up this year, where the president, who wasn't elected legitimately in the first place, is now sinking in the polls. And, you know, what people in Latin America are all wondering is, well, will Bush try to steal the next election, too? And if he does try to steal it, what will the response of the American people be? Will they take it lying down like they did in 2000, like Al Gore and the Democratic Party did in 2000? Or will they stand up and fight Bolivian and Latin American style pro-democracy tactics and strategies to win back your democracy?
One can only hope that they'll dare to do something, because it sure was a rollover in the last round, if you ask me.
Well, I don't know. I'm just watching from afar. I sense some very good trends up in the United States. The fear is lifting already from the post-September 11th era, and you're seeing it reflected electorally now in the primaries that are going on. And so, in fact, tomorrow there's a whole other series of votes, and I think we'll have a much clearer picture of what direction that race is going in after tomorrow. But at least one of the leading candidates, who seems to be winning primaries, is pro-medical marijuana. He doesn't seem upset about the marijuana issue. That's John Kerry. And you have other candidates like Dennis Kucinich, who are also even more progressive on the drug issue. And so this is the first national electoral campaign in the United States where these issues have begun to come out in the open and be discussed. They're not being discussed enough. We have to keep pushing them. On my own blog, I'm going to be starting to push Mr. Kerry a little harder in the next few days. But I do think that, when did we ever have leading presidential candidates who were for medical marijuana and who said, as Kerry said to Rolling Stone, that he didn't really think that possession or personal use of marijuana should be prosecuted as a crime?
Good that they're finally, right, opening the door, discussing it, bandying.
But now what we have to do is we have to push them much harder to refine their positions and to make their positions consistent. I mean, I think one of the big questions for Kerry is Plan Colombia. What is he going to do? Is he going to continue this horrible multi-billion-dollar U.S. military intervention that only creates misery and suffering and hatred and death? Or is he going to apply the lessons of Vietnam to what's going on down here and stop this herbicide spraying that's so destructive to the environment in such an important place as the Amazon rainforest? These are major questions coming up for Kerry in the coming weeks and for all of the other candidates as well.
Now, Al, in much the same way that you're revitalizing this independent journalism through, smaller donations and such, many of the Pacifica and affiliate stations have to do much the same to raise funds from their community. What would you say about that free and independent speech these stations provide?
This is Al Giordano from Latin America. It's very important to us, the programs of Dean Becker and the drug war work he does on the radio in the United States. It's not being done by any other radio network, and I hope that when Dean comes around and asks his listeners to pitch in, that y'all will.
Well, that's wonderful. Al, thank you for joining us on Cultural Baggage.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sir,
and we'll keep you posted over at narconews.com. Stay tuned.
We're just a week or two away
from blast off, and we're going to appear like out of lightning when we start.
Al Giordano, quite a guy. Okay, next up I have an interview I did yesterday.
We have on the line Tom Murphy, the national coordinator of Vote Hemp. How are you this afternoon, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dean?
I'm quite well. I understand you've had a chance to go over the issue of hemp with several of the presidential candidates. What have you learned, sir?
I have learned that Dennis Kucinich is one of the most ardent supporters of hemp in the United States. Senator Kerry is also a man of his word and has answered his survey and has very, very good opinions on that.
The issue of hemp is not just one of marijuana. This is for industrial purposes, is it not?
That is correct. There are entirely different varieties. There are entirely different varieties. Industrial hemp is low in THC and high in CBD, whereas marijuana is high in THC and low in CBD. CBD is what's known as cannabidiol. And industrial hemp is as sweet corn is to field corn, industrial hemp is to marijuana. So they're entirely different varieties.
A gentleman like Jack Hare started kind of a renewed investigation of it, and there are thousands upon thousands of use for industrial hemp, right?
Yes, there are. Jack did discover quite a few things, including the Hemp for Victory trailer that was done by the USDA in the during the middle of World War II. They were promoting industrial hemp growing in the United States because of the cutoff of raw material from the Philippines.
If you could direct the people out there listening to some information in this regard, what would you have them do?
I would have them go to the Vote Hemp website at www.votehemp.com. There you can see the latest voter guide for all of the presidential candidates, as well as the current press releases and court documents in the HIA versus DEA case.
And what can they do in this regard to help bring this issue to focus?
We have tools on our website at Vote Hemp that they can write and email their representatives in Washington, encouraging them to differentiate between industrial hemp and marijuana in the Controlled Substances Act. And the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture recently passed a resolution encouraging the same thing.
Well, Tom Murphy, National Coordinator for Vote Hemp, I thank you for joining us.
If you enjoy the voices that participate in this program, I would urge you to visit our website, and that is at www.cultural-baggage.com. There we have more than 70 such shows, some half-hour, one-hour, and even two-hour specials talking about racial bias in today's America. Did you know that last month a Molson brewery, or at least one that had been a brewery, was found to contain 30,000 high-grade marijuana plants up there in Canada? Well, next week we're going to do a show about those crazy Canadians. Our guests will include Canadian Senator Pierre Claude Nolan, the Mayor of Vancouver, Larry Campbell, and an assorted collection of riffraff and jokers. Good people all. And as always, I must remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.